loved. I couldn't forget what just happened back at the pier. It was like my mother told me, the thing between men and women that would never change. Luke was dangerous. Connor's mother had said something similar to me one afternoon when I was at their house, working with Mr. Rosario on my applications. We always sat at the kitchen island. We would lean in together and look at my essays on his laptop. He would show me what changes he'd made and ask me if I approved. Sometimes we would work side by side with paper and pen. Mrs. Rosario, who I knew had bad feelings toward me after what happened with her son, would stay on the third floor in her office. But one afternoon, Mr. Rosario got pulled away on a phone call with a client. I heard Mrs. Rosario coming down the stairs, turning the corner. She walked to the refrigerator and grabbed an energy drink, popped the tab, and took a long sip. And then she came and sat down where her husband had been just minutes before.
How are things going, Eve? Making any progress with my husband?
I felt my heart jump. What did she really mean by that? I couldn't tell by the way she said it. So I told her about the scholarship applications that had all fallen through, and the money I'd been trying to save at the inn.
I just need enough for first semester tuition and a place to live.
It is so unfair about the banks. How they won't give you a loan without a co-signer. And your father's bankruptcy. Ugh, such a shame. A lot of girls work their way through college, though. You're resourceful, Eve. You'll find a way.
I felt so angry when she said that about my father. He was doing the best he could. And then she made it sound so easy. How I would find my way. That's something people only say when they haven't had to find their way any place but their country club. Then she lowered her voice, letting me know this was some kind of secret between us.
There might be another option for you, if you're interested.
Yes. Yes, anything. What is it? She said she worked with a lot of wealthy people, who all invested their money together. It wasn't anything official, just an informal community that shared information to help them make good decisions in the stock market. But she said they also made loans, usually to companies, but sometimes to individuals. People needed money for all kinds of things. She said you could charge higher interest for personal loans, that they were largely unregulated, and the people getting the money rarely complained about the terms. I had never heard of such a thing, and I asked her if I could be one of those people.
The only thing is, Eve, you're a very high risk. The chances that you'll finish and get a job are pretty low.
What was I supposed to say to that? Why were my chances low? Because I'd broken up with her son? Because I'd slept with two boys? Was she calling me a slut? Just like Connor had at prom? Or was this about my father and how poor we were? And why did she dangle this so-called option in front of me if it wasn't real? But then she said,
"There are some people who will take on that kind of risk."
She smiled and looked away, like she was thinking. And yet somehow I had this feeling that she knew exactly where she'd been leading us since she popped the top of that energy drink.
You know, Eve, when I first started out, I was never invited to the meetings where the important things happened. I was always told to stay put. In the room next door, the men had all the power. The thing is, when a woman wants to get some of that power for herself, there are only three ways to do it. With a smile, with a hammer, or with a really clever trick.
I stared at her for a long time. She seemed pleased that she had startled me.
Would it bother you, Eve, if the money came from a man who liked to have all the power?
No. I guess not. If you thought it was a good idea. Then she said she would be in touch and went back to her study on the third floor, where she made enough money for Mr. Rosario to shuffle papers. The rest of the day, as I sat beside him, filling out more applications that were likely as futile as the others, I wondered which tool Mrs. Rosario had used to get where she was in life. Regardless, I trusted her. I always had. On the second floor of the inn, a window slammed shut in a guest room, and I saw Luke's head turn to see what the noise was. That was my chance. I ran the other way, down the other part of the lawn that led to the woods, and eventually to the small clearing where Brooke's house was. No one ever went down there. There was nothing to see, only a small trail that Mr. Lowry had cleared for the family to walk back and forth without having to go all the way around on the road. I went down that path a few yards until I knew I was hidden. And then I watched Luke Kendrick look my way, into the woods. And for one moment, I thought he had seen me. But then, he walked down the lawn, the other way, toward the entrance to the basement game room. When he was gone, I knew I had two choices. I could go down the path to Brooke's house. I knew how to sneak in through the back door, to her room, which would be empty. I told my father this was where I would be, and so that's where I should go. I thought maybe all of these obstacles had been a sign that what I was doing was dangerous, that it was wrong. But then I thought about what Tyler had said, what he had implied about me and Mr. Lowry, and it struck me that this couldn't have come out of nowhere. I'd been friends with his father for 4 years. Someone had put this idea in his head, and yes, that had to be why he'd stopped hanging out with us last winter. Oh God, someone had given him this idea, this wrong idea, that something had actually happened between us. And God, no. Is that what Brooke meant earlier when she said she hated me? Both of them had been given this wrong idea, and I knew exactly who'd given it to them. I couldn't go to Brooke's house where Mrs. Lowry might be waiting. Maybe this was a different sign, telling me to just get this over with so I could go to college and start over. I was scared. That was all. I had to fight through the fear. This was my way out of this mess, which felt even bigger after what had just happened with Mr. Lowry and Tyler, who would tell Brooke and she would tell Carrie. Everyone I loved in this town would hate me. I had no choice. I had to finish what I'd started.
Chapter 42. Carrie. July 4th, 2025. I finally get some sleep thanks to the Ambien my mother gives me. It's our last night alone until we get Sylvie back from her father. My stomach churns every time I think that word in my head. Father, but also husband, liar. I try not to let the other one take shape, but I can't help it. Killer. Eve's voice from that video echoes in my head.
Stop it, guys! You know I can't swim!
I wake, groggy, to the sunlight, and the heat, and the day that I dread every year. But on this 4th of July, I'm not just thinking about Eve or her case. I'm getting close to solving it. The first call I get is about the warrant for the room next door at the Four Points Hotel. The prosecutor says it got lost in the shuffle. I don't question it, or ask if Rob has been in touch with her about the case. Not yet. Not until I know more. After a quick shower, I start to move. Jamie is already on the road when I get in my car and drive south to the Four Points Hotel. I call him to check in, and he tells me he's been up most of the night.
I ran different rope fibers through an AI program, along with the photos of Eve Shea's body. I did the same thing with the splinters found in her back.
Did they come from a boat? An anchor line on a boat? Tell me.
It's possible, but it's really common rope for moorings as well.
So it could have been from a raft or a buoy.
The wood splinters, though, they were teak, and that's not as common for a mooring.
But maybe a floating raft? So it is possible she got caught up in the line anchoring one offshore.
Or a wooden boat. The varnish under her nails did have the same chemicals as varnish used to seal wood. But also some brands of clear nail polish. They never ran a GCMS or an FTIR. That would have narrowed it down. Sorry, it's not more conclusive.
Eve never wore nail polish. But that night, she looked different. Like she was wearing makeup, brushed her hair out, and wore it down. Maybe that night she'd even painted her nails. I thought I knew everything about her and Brooke, but that's already been proven wrong. Okay. And still nothing on David Paul, or that Proton Mail address?
The rep from Proton Mail says they won't release names without a warrant, and even then she said they usually contest it.
So we'll have to take them to court, and that will take forever. Let's put in for the warrant anyway.
You got it. Oh, and I ran David Paul through a new AI program. It finds names in books, songs, TV shows, but also public records. The names come up a bunch of times, but no one matches the description we have for the guy.
Okay. Thanks, Jamie. I mean it. Thanks. See you in a few. I arrive there first, parking in the gravel lot. The place seems empty. Maybe it's the heat, or the holiday. We've forced them to close off the entire third building with the two rooms, one facing the garden and the other the river, which, likely, carried Peter's body all the way to the Atlantic. I get out of my car and take in the silence of the woods. The connection between Eve's case and Peter's starts here. I have to slow my mind and focus on the facts. Peter Walsh was investigating Eve's death. He knew his boat might have been involved. But why now, after all these years? The scratches on the hull, the missing anchor. He knew about those when the boat was taken out of the water. Renee said they never heard about the things found on Eve's body, or that she was pregnant. Eve had been at the pier. She'd walked all the way to the access road, past the Granger's house. She'd spoken to Jeremy Ashbourne in his car, but then left after he suggested she might be pregnant and blackmailing some guy to get money for college. Luke was at the inn, but claims he never saw her. He just heard from his teammate that she'd been there, fighting with Tyler Lowry. None of the boys who were in the game room that night, except for Tyler, were ever questioned. But then, Eve's clothes were found at the beach, north of the pier. Not the obvious place she would have gone for a swim after leaving there. Jamie arrives before I can spin more theories. When he reaches me by the wood signs, which point to each of the eight rooms, I tell him to follow me, and we walk the path to River 3, the room Peter Walsh rented with his LLC. I decide to go there first to see if there's anything new I can sort out after the autopsy results. I try to explain what's happened, while leaving out the piece about Rob and Peter Walsh investigating Eve's case. I also say nothing about how they might be related, covering with a comment about how I've never been so busy. Two murder investigations going on at the same time? And why am I still protecting Brooke, and myself, and Rob, for that matter? This is all wrong, but I don't reverse course. Jamie is nervous, but excited. He's never been to a crime scene. The door opens with the code we've been given by management after obtaining the warrant, and we step inside. The cleaners have been through it again now. But no one's rented it since. There's no sign of the luminol or print dust, and the bed's been remade, the towels replaced. I take new pictures with my phone, turning slowly in a circle to get every corner. I think about the struggle Brooke described, where it might have taken place, and what might have happened if it moved outside to the balcony. It's only about 3 feet wide, just enough room to stand and look across the river. The railing is up to the bottom of my ribs, which would have been lower on Peter Walsh if he fell against it. Dr. Keith said there was no wood in the wound on his neck, which might rule out the balcony as the cause of his injury and his death. Jamie and I go through the different ways he might have been struck with a smooth, round object, like a pole of some kind, and then dragged to the balcony. Jamie says that he could have been rolled. There's nothing at the bottom of the rail, no netting or wire.
Someone could have killed him in the room and then rolled him off the porch into the river.
I nod and ask him to follow me inside. I tell him to stand right in the middle and then wait. The forensics team is on their way to look for prints in the room next door, but I have something else I want to see there. It's not easy to get to Garden 3 from River 3, even though the rooms are part of the same building. The Four Points wants its guests to feel like they're the only ones there, never seeing or hearing another person. So I walk back to the parking lot, then follow the path to the room where Brooke met her lover, David Paul. I think about everything Brooke told me 3 days ago on Leroy Street, while we both stared at the ocean, thinking about Eve. The path winds through the woods, just like Brooke described, up to the top of the cliff where it levels and straightens, opening to a small garden and the entrance to the room. I try to remember now all of the details, but so much of what she said was about the affair, the reasons she was having it, and her life story since I last saw her when we were teenagers, the summer that Eve died. The images she evoked were so vivid. Her 4 years in college, and then in New York. The way she became closed off, intent on being independent so she would never have to go home to East Bay, to her family. Machiavellian, she said. That was how she described herself. And then the affair, not just where and when they met, but the attraction that lingered. The first kiss, the way they stood by the river in Providence, perfectly still, David's hands holding her against him, their lips pressed together. And from there, the first night they had sex. I know there were things she said in between all of that, but my mind was on the scenes she laid out so carefully because, I remind myself, she's a writer now, a storyteller. She always was, even back in high school. The way she told me and Eve about her mother and the things she did and said, she always started at the beginning, where everyone was in the house, what they were doing, what they were wearing, then the build-up to the fight. Every word, every reaction, her father remaining calm, trying to guide his wife away from her agitation. Tyler turning to Brooke for protection, the look on his face, how he would stare at the carpet and listen to every word, trying to navigate their mother's mind so they could prevent it from happening again. She told stories about Jeremy Ashbourne as well. Every word he said to her, every look, every innuendo. But her plans to spend the night with him after the bonfire, she kept to herself. Or, at least, she never told me. Not even when Eve disappeared that same night. Then she lied again, I've now learned. She wasn't with Jeremy Ashbourne that night, except for the fight on the road after Jeremy spoke to Eve. I get to the door of Garden 3 and use the second entry code the manager gave us. I walk inside the room, and it's just as I pictured it when Brooke told me her story. The bed against the far wall, the windows on either side opening up to thick woods facing north, the bar in the back with the bottles of liquor and crystal glasses against the shared wall with River 3, the bathroom to the left, then another window facing south. I pull up the photos from River 3 and look from them to the room I'm standing in now, Garden 3. Everything is the same. Wait. I look again to make sure I'm right. On the bar in this room is a bottle of wine. It's packaged for the hotel. The label has its name and logo. Beside it is a menu with items and prices for the bar. The wine is listed, a California Pinot Noir at $85 a bottle. I check the photos for River 3 from 3 days ago, and again today. There's no wine on the bar. I pick it up and hold it in my hand around the neck. Then I lift it into the air. Could this be the murder weapon? Could this have crushed Peter Walsh's windpipe and caused his arteries to bleed? A smooth, rounded object, the Emmy had said. A bottle of wine. And it's missing from the room next door. I text Jamie and ask him to call the manager. Find out when the last time was that they replaced the bottle. No one has rented this room since Peter Walsh. Maybe the staff overlooked it and didn't replace it with a new one. It wasn't charged to Peter's bill. We checked that the day his body was found. My heart pounds faster as I think about the scenario. Now I want to walk through every step. I want to play out what Brooke heard. The only wall without a window is the one with the bar. It has to be the one the rooms share. I text Jamie and tell him to listen by it. Then I knock, hard. Did you hear that? He answers.
Yes.
I send Jamie a script I've written, and I tell him to say the words softly, then louder and louder. Then he gets it. He texts me.
You want to know if they could have heard something through the wall?
Yes. I look at the script, the words Brooke said she heard that night.
You're crazy! You're out of your mind!
You're the one who made me crazy!
When I play them back in my mind, I hear words from another story Brooke told me. About the fight between her mother and father that she could never share with Eve, but had made her so angry and broken Tyler's heart. I can still hear them.
Will you stop it? You're out of your mind!
You're crazy.
I've never been more sane than right now.
Am I imagining this? The sequence? The cadence? Accusations of being crazy, out of your mind. People say those things when they fight, don't they? Then my phone rings. Jamie is on the other line, wondering what the hell is going on.
Did you hear any of that?
Hear what?
Those words. I said them 3 times. Soft, then loud. I screamed them at the end.
What? Are you sure you're at the right wall?
It's the only one without a window. I felt the knock through it.
I didn't hear anything. Did you yell?
So loud they could probably hear me across the river. You didn't hear any of it?
No. Just stay there. Give me a minute. I stand in the room where Brooke was with her lover the night Peter Walsh died. She told me first that they both heard the entire confrontation, the exact words, not just the fist pounding. She was so specific, remembering what was said and the pauses in between. Then she told me a new version of the story, that she was alone when she heard the fighting, that David Paul came in later. She cast suspicion on him. Brooke also lied about knowing Peter Walsh. Brooke Lowry, the novelist, the storyteller. But these walls really are soundproof, just like the manager said. And now, I've uncovered the biggest lie of all. Brooke Lowry didn't hear one single word coming from the room next door. My phone rings. It's Jamie.
Hey, the manager said the wine was replaced the day Peter Walsh checked in. He said they always have one when a new guest arrives. But no one's rented River 3 since Walsh was here.
That's what I thought. We may have our murder weapon.
Oh, damn.
Hey, you said you ran some program with the name David Paul?
Yeah, it checks all kinds of records. Births, deaths, marriage, divorce, also parties to litigation, bankruptcy filings, anything legal that's online and public. There's a dozen David Pauls, but none who live close to Providence or East Bay. The ones who are within 100 miles I already found, they were in that photo array I gave you.
The photo array that Brooke looked at in my office. None of them matched, she said. Is that all?
It also checked TV shows, movies, books, magazine articles. No matches with David Paul.
Okay, stay put. I'll wait for forensics. But then, I get another thought. What books did it check?
Just popular fiction. It might take a while to check every book ever published. Do you want me to have it run for those?
No, I've got it. Hold tight until forensics arrives.
Cool. And Renee Walsh got into Peter's Google account. She has a search history from his laptop.
Get it to me ASAP.
You got it.
I stare at the wall as the adrenaline settles, thinking now that forensics won't find anything in this room that leads us to David Paul, because David Paul doesn't exist. Brooke was here, but she was with Peter Walsh in the room next door. And I think she killed him.
Part 4. Chapter 43. Brooke. Aiden is not beside me when I wake. I can hear the faint sound of plates being gathered from the dishwasher and stacked in the cupboard. I smell coffee. I pick up my phone and check the time. It's just past 7. And then I see the date, July 4th. I set it down on my chest and let out an exhale that feels like a silent scream as the dream trickles back in. It had taken me back to the room next door, and the nights I'd spent there with Peter Walsh. Nearly everything I told Carrie about the affair was true. I was at the bookshop in Mystic when Peter Walsh walked in, looking for a gift for his daughter. I was doing a reading in the back of the store with a small crowd that had nothing better to do, except when Peter Walsh saw me, he knew me right away. Of course he did. I was that girl from East Bay who had been smoking on the dock. The one who gave him a cigarette and let him lure her to his boat for a drink, and then a talk, and then a kiss that led to more and more as I used him to cure me of the intolerable state of virginity in a small town. I never expected to see him again. Just like I told Carrie, we walked along the water, and then he kissed me. I remembered it so well, the way he pressed his lips to mine and then held so still with his hands around my face, making that first connection long and deep, tapping into the memory my body held of that first time on his boat. He'd known Renee since college, he told me. They'd broken up and gotten back together time and time again. He said he always felt there was something missing in their relationship, but he didn't know what it was. And yet he'd never found anyone else to prove her theory wrong, that they were meant to be together. So when he turned 24, it seemed right to get married. It was the timing of it, he said. If they'd been broken up and he'd decided to travel or move to another city to see what else was out there for him, it never would have happened. I remember he said,
"In the end, we have very little control over how we live and how we die."
And now he was dead. I slip out of bed, shaking off the dream and the memories of Peter Walsh. They won't serve me now. Not on this day. I brush my teeth and hair, change into shorts and a t-shirt. Then I go downstairs where I find my husband at the island in the kitchen. The coffee is in a cup in front of him, and when he looks up, I expect to see the smile that I see every morning. And the greeting, "Good morning, sweetheart," I expect him to say. But that's not what happens on this morning. No. Aiden looks up, his face red and streaked with tears. His phone is beside him and he picks it up like he wants me to see what's on the screen from across the room.
"Sweetheart, what's happened?"
But he's too upset to even speak. He shakes his head and extends his arm further, urging me to come closer and see what he's seen, what's made him so upset. And when I do, when I walk to him and take his phone, my heart nearly jumps out of my chest. It's an email like the one I received yesterday from the same address, user 4581@pm.com. The one that said, "They know you were there, Candace. Make it go away." I'd been so scared I'd gone to Carrie for help, telling her it might be from my fake lover, David Paul, so she would look into it. And I haven't heard a word from her since. Not even Tyler could help me. It was untraceable. What kind of world is this where people can be so anonymous? And now this person has sent a message to my husband. It's a photo of me and Peter Walsh inside the room we loved so much, River 3 at the Four Points. The photo was taken through an open window from the porch that hangs over the water. I stare at it, and I know it's from the night I described to Carrie, the lie I told her about the last time I was with a man named David Paul. It was, in fact, the last night I was with Peter. When I didn't even turn around as he entered the room, when I heard him walk to me, the belt latch opening, the shirt falling to the floor. The picture was taken when he finally reached me and kissed my neck and tied my hands in his belt. I can still hear him whispering in my ear,
"Do you want to play?"
Jesus, someone has sent this to Aiden. Someone was watching us. I try to make the tears come, but I don't feel sadness. All I feel is fear. Aiden, I'm so sorry.
Who is this man?
Aiden shakes the phone in his hand like he wants to erase what's on the screen. He walks to the other side of the island, putting it between us. I've never seen him cry like this. What do I do? If I tell him the truth, I'll have to tell Carrie that there is no David Paul, that I made the whole thing up because I knew I would be the prime suspect in Peter Walsh's murder. Jeremy swore he didn't tell her I knew Peter back then, but I could tell he was lying. Carrie got it out of him.
How stupid do you think I am?
Really fucking stupid, Jeremy. I want to grab the phone back and look at the picture. I want to see if there's some way I can still tell Carrie it's David Paul. If this proton male stalker sent this to her as well as my husband. The description I gave her was similar to Peter. Aiden is waiting, my silence confounding him. He yells at me,
"Brooke, tell me what this is!"
And all I can think to do is run.
I'm sorry, Aiden. I'm so sorry.
I rush out of the kitchen to the foyer. I grab my purse and my car keys, and then I'm out the front door to my car that's parked in the driveway. I run, like a coward, like a liar. I've broken this man's heart, but the truth is, all I care about right now is getting the hell out of here.
Chapter 44. Carrie. I drive north to East Bay, anger pulsing through my veins. Brooke lied to me about everything. I'm certain of it now. I called the bookstore in Providence. Brooke said she'd arranged a signing there so she could have a second meeting with this fictitious man named David Paul. Only, the bookstore in Providence has never heard of Brooke Lowry. And now, we finally have the history from Peter Walsh's Google account, the searches he did on his missing laptop. Peter was searching for images from Eve's funeral. He clicked on just one photo to enlarge, an image of Brooke's brother, Tyler Lowry. Jamie's going back to the station to look through each link on that list. I want to see the images that Peter Walsh looked at. He's also looking over the documents Brooke said Tyler generated in his search for David Paul, because I wonder now if he's been in this with her the whole time, her lie about the room next door. I don't know how Tyler Lowry is connected to Eve's death, but Peter did. And now he's dead, and Brooke was with him. I can't help but think about the day Brooke showed up at my house, with Tyler, both of them soaking wet, having run from their home where their mother was screaming at their father. The same words that Brooke used in her elaborate lie about the room next door. The fight between her parents that was about Eve, her mother's accusation that they were sleeping together.
Go! Go on, right now! Tell her!
You're crazy.
Go! Tell her that you're sleeping with her friend. Tell everyone how you're fucking Eve Shay!
I'd never seen Brooke so upset, but it was nothing compared to what I saw on Tyler's face. He was just 13, and to him, Eve was everything. It was more than a crush. I could see it in the devastation the accusation had caused. He changed after that day. He stopped tagging along with Brooke when she came to meet us. He didn't want anything to do with us because of Eve. And what might have happened when Eve made it to the inn that night? Tyler was there in the game room. He'd had a fight with Eve. Luke's friend saw it. But this is all speculation. I could spin 100 scenarios and never know the truth. So I drive, moving as fast as I can, just like Eve on the night she died, straight for the East Bay Inn.
Chapter 45. Eve. I hid in the woods after Luke was gone. I hid and watched as Mr. Lowry walked the entire length of the dock, checking inside the boats and the stretches of water in between the slips. I heard him call my name.
Eve! Are you out here? Eve! Eve!
When he got to the end, he paused, shook his head, then turned and walked back to the end of the dock, then up the steps to the patio and inside the sliding doors, which he closed behind him. I thought about how long this night had been. It was almost 1 in the morning. I prayed that I wasn't too late.
Chapter 46. Brooke. I pull to the curb a few houses up the access road and text Tyler as soon as I'm sure Aiden hasn't followed me. I tell him to meet me in the game room at the inn. I don't want to go to the house. I don't want to see my mother or my father. But Tyler texts back that the game room is packed with kids already, some League of Legends championship that's going on. It's lasting all day. So I tell him to grab his laptop and meet me in the library. It's a small space in the front of the inn. There are no windows, just a fireplace. It's always been my favorite room, but the guests have no reason to be there during the summer. I tell him to hang the sign that says it's closed for a private party, and he says he will. He knows something's wrong. I drive up to the front and stop at the valet. I tell the kid there that I'm going to park the car myself. I have no idea if I'll have to leave in a hurry. And what am I even doing? All I can think right now is that I have to find out who sent that picture to Aiden and who sent the message to me. Tyler has to find a way. He has to try again. I click the locks on the door, then walk quickly to the front steps, waving again at the valet, and then the doorman and the bellhop, who are always standing on guard, waiting for guests to arrive or leave. I turn left, past the front desk, and see the sign hanging on the door to the library. Tyler's done as I've asked. I turn the handle and walk inside. And I'm right. Tyler is there. But he's not alone.
Carrie?
I look at Tyler, sitting at the antique desk with his laptop. I can tell from the look on his face that he has no idea what's happening. Carrie walks behind him and asks if she could pull something up on his computer. Her voice is strained, the way it always is when she's trying to stay calm, but ready to explode.
Why don't you join us?
I feel like I'm walking on glass as I make the few steps to the other side of the desk where Carrie is pulling something up on the screen. I don't know what I'm expecting. Maybe the same photo that was sent to Aiden. Maybe it was also sent to her. And then it appears. This photo from Eve's funeral that was printed in the local paper, the Coastal Chronicle.
Why are you making us look at this?
I remember seeing the photo in the paper and thinking it was so cruel. To show a 13-year-old boy crying, someone who has to live in this town and sees everyone in it every day. His grief on display, exposed. It was horrible then, and it's even more horrible now, and I don't hesitate to tell her.
What the hell is wrong with you?
Carrie clicks to exit the site, and the photo disappears from the screen. She's got the gun in her holster and the badge clipped onto her belt. She looks so official as she walks to the coffee table between the two reading chairs, not saying a word, as if she can intimidate me. I know what's going on inside that head of hers. She's feeling betrayed and hurt. But wait. Oh, I think I know why she pulled up that picture. It must be the same one that Peter Walsh found, the one he told me about when he accused my brother of killing Eve Shay.
Chapter 47. Carrie. I'm so angry I want to scream. Just like I did when I discovered Brooke had lied about where she was the night Eve disappeared, when she first told the police that she was home by midnight, tucked into bed. There were countless times before that when I'd felt this kind of anger, maybe even rage toward Brooke. Eve had brought us together with her longing for human connection, finding things in both of us that she needed, never asking whether there was something between us that could survive without her. Never asking if it was a good thing that she'd brought us together in the first place. And now, I wish I'd never met Brooke Lowry. I've left a book on the table that sits between the two reading chairs, and I go there now and pick it up. The one copy of a novel that had been donated to our public library. Brooke used to drag us here, me and Eve, during the off-season. She would ask one of the staff to make us a fire and bring us hot chocolate. We would all grab books from the wall, sometimes reading a chapter or two before we got bored and gossiped about other kids at school. Sometimes we would read from the older books that were funny to us because they were written so long ago, and we were young and easily amused. Brooke liked the melodramatic passages about people falling in love with just one look or from across a room. She would read them with exaggeration and foreign accents. But when we read to ourselves, Brooke always grabbed this same book, Lovers and Liars, written by Jeremy Ashbourne. I pick up the book now and turn the pages until I find a passage that has the name, David Paul. And when I begin to read it, I hear Brooke gasp as reality sets in. I know the truth about who killed Peter Walsh.
Chapter 48. Brooke. Fuck. What was I thinking, using that name, Candace Kane, when Peter and I started our affair? We always rented both rooms in the third building to be sure no one heard or saw us. I would rent Garden 3, and he would rent the room that faced the river, River 3, using the names of his LLCs. And then I used the name David Paul for my fictitious lover. The book it's from was obscure, self-published by our English teacher. No one in East Bay except for me ever read it. When I needed the name of my fake lover, that was the one that came to my mind. It was before Peter's body drifted into East Bay and Carrie got the case. Tyler helped me start the text chains on the Signal app 2 days after Peter went missing. It was a good name to use. I knew because if Peter was ever found, and if they were able to trace the room at the Four Points back to me, the search for David Paul would lead the investigators around in circles. I had done this search myself when I was younger. I was obsessed with the characters Jeremy had created. I used to Google them, wanting to know if they were named after anyone who was real, someone from his life. The name brought up a lot of men, too many to point the finger at anyone, especially if I didn't recognize their faces, which of course I wouldn't. It's not easy to come up with a fake lover. I thought I was being so clever. I couldn't have foreseen that a fucking fishing trawler would bring his body right here to East Bay where Carrie Hollis was chief of police, the one person alive who still knows me so well. High school friends are dangerous that way. So now what? I'm in a corner. I look at Tyler and see the fear on his face and the scar on his neck. I think about what our secret has done to us all these years. It's made me stronger, but Tyler, it nearly destroyed him. And look at his life. He's still in East Bay, working at the diner, living with our parents. He's so smart, he could be anything, if he could just get out from under that night that happened 15 years ago, on this very day, the 4th of July. Now I'm the one who's angry. None of this should have happened. We shouldn't have been born to that woman, and our father should have set us free from her long ago. He saw what she was doing to us, and he just cowered. Except for that one day when he defended Eve Shay, calling our mother crazy and out of her mind. But nothing changed after that. The next time they had a fight, I never even heard my father's voice. I guess even Eve wasn't worth fighting for. I've never pitied myself, and I've survived, even now. Aiden might leave me, but I'll land on my feet, far away from this place. Maybe this time I can take Tyler with me. I'm the only one who can set him free. And I decide to do it right here and now. I take a breath and tell Carrie everything I know.
Chapter 49. Eve. It was quiet as I walked along the dock, the boats rocking with the swell of the ocean, causing the moorings to creak. There was something soothing about it. I'd always thought that when I came out on the boat with Peter and Renee. The last 6 weeks had been magical. For the first time, I could see my future. I knew it had to be away from my father and the sadness that seeped from his pores and infected what was left of our family. I could finally see it when I was on Peter's boat with my new friends, and when I was with them at the Eden House. Kids who were in college and looking forward to their futures. There was so much more for me outside of East Bay. Renee had told me about her plans to go to law school. She talked about her classes and everything she was learning, and she whispered to me that she was going to marry Peter, whether he liked it or not, she used to joke. I loved Brooke and Carrie, but we were still stuck in our old life, the one I wanted to escape. Renee and Peter and everyone I met at the Eden House had made me feel like I already had. I'd started to reach for it, finding ways to get the money I needed. I went to Connor Rosario's house, even though it made me feel sick inside because his mother hated me and his father didn't, when he should have. Both things felt wrong. I went because Mr. Rosario had offered to help when no one else could. After a while, I think we both knew that I wouldn't get any scholarships. He kept telling me to keep the faith. But in the end, it was Mrs. Rosario who had the answer. When I got to Peter's boat, it was empty, rocking back and forth. I wanted to climb on it, curl up on the deck, and look at the stars. I wanted to find my mother and ask her what I should do. But then the ocean swelled again, and I felt the dock lift, sending me off balance, until I fell down and began rolling toward the edge of the dock.
Chapter 50. Carrie. I stand in front of the bookcase, holding Lovers and Liars in my hands. I hold it so hard my knuckles turn white as Brooke tells her story. I don't know why, but for some reason, I believe her, even after all the lies she's told. It was Peter Walsh she met at the bookstore in Mystic. They reconnected and started having an affair. On Tuesday nights, they rented two rooms at the Four Points Hotel, Garden 3 and River 3. They wanted the whole unit to themselves to make sure they weren't discovered. They didn't always meet in Garden 3, like she said before. Sometimes they liked the room over the river. She said this went on for months, and that they met 8 times. And then she corrects herself and says, actually, it was just 7 times. The 8th time was the night that he died. She was apprehensive going to meet him on that 8th night. The last time they'd met, about 3 weeks before, they'd found their way to talking about East Bay. And from there, The conversation meandered to Eve Shay. 3 weeks. The same time Renee Walsh said Peter had begun his searches. Brooke said her name came up through a memory that Peter had when he was talking about Renee and how they had met a girl one summer. She would have been in Brooke's high school class. And that's when he said her name, Eve Shay. Brooke said she was so surprised she sat up straight in the bed, pulling away from him as if he had confessed to a crime. She asked him if he knew that Eve had died, and of course he did. He told her what he thought was true, that she had gone for a swim at the beach late at night and drowned. He said Renee felt terrible about it because she had meant to teach Eve how to swim, but never got around to it. Then he told her how strange they both thought it was, because Eve was so afraid of the water. She always wore a life vest on his boat. Peter got up then and poured them drinks at the bar. He said something like,
"Such a damn shame. She was so beautiful, inside and out."
I can picture the scene as she laid it out. The two of them naked, under the covers, sitting side by side with their glasses of scotch. I'd just been in that room. I can see her surprise when Peter told her about his friendship with Eve, and then his surprise when she told him what had come out later that summer, after her body was found, how she was 6 weeks pregnant and had rope burns around her waist, wood splinters in her back, and varnish under her nails. They thought that maybe she had gotten swept out over her head and run into an unused mooring belonging to a private home. The wood and the rope, she could have become entangled. They couldn't explain the varnish, but the rope and the wood splinters, they had a theory about that. Brooke pauses and asks,
"Isn't that right, Carrie? Isn't that what everyone thought?"
I nod slowly, mesmerized by her story. It feels so real to me. She says then that Peter went dead silent. She turned and looked at his face, and he was completely shocked. She asked him what was wrong, and then he told her about the scratches on the side of his boat and the anchor that was missing when it was taken out of the water later that fall. He said they thought it was just from all the kids who'd stayed at Eden that summer and used the boat. They'd lost the anchor twice, spilled drinks on the cushions. His parents were angry, but none of them connected it to Eve's death. They didn't know about the things they'd found on her body. Brooke said that after that, they had run out of time. They had to get back home to Aiden and Renee. Peter said he would call her on Signal later that week, but she already knew what he was thinking. That someone killed Eve and used his boat and his anchor to hide her body in the ocean.
Chapter 51. Brooke. I stop then, hoping this is enough for Carrie to chew on for a while. I can see the wheels turning in her head, wondering how much of this story is true, given all the lies that I've told. Carrie was always more diligent than I was, more methodical, but I can think on my feet. She studies my face from across the room, then slowly turns her gaze to Tyler, who's still sitting at the desk, staring at his folded hands. All of us are thinking about the image that she's pulled up on that screen, the picture that had captivated Peter Walsh. But she doesn't say it, no. She wants to lure me into her trap. We can all deduce from my story that Peter left the Four Points that night convinced that his boat was being used by the person who killed Eve, and that he probably went home and started to search everything he could about her and the people who were in East Bay that summer. He wouldn't have spoken to Renee about it because then he would have to tell her why he was so curious after 15 years. She wouldn't believe that he suddenly came across the newspaper article that mentioned the details from the autopsy. Carrie knows better than to ask me about the night Eve died. She knows that she needs to start with Peter Walsh and the eighth night we were supposed to meet.
Were you at the Four Points that night?
Yes. I booked Garden 3 and went there early. I was filled with anticipation. I couldn't wait to get away from Aiden and my life in East Bay, even for a little while.
I start from there. The excuse I told Aiden, the excitement I felt driving to meet Peter, but also the apprehension. We'd made the plan to meet, but there had been something strange in our communications. I suspected he'd been digging into Eve's death. I also knew that he would remember the boy who was working at the dock that summer, who had access to the boat keys, and who would also know that Peter's family left their keys in the storage console. That was why he downloaded the photo of Tyler at Eve's funeral. He recognized him and knew he had access to his boat. I was prepared to answer questions when I went to the room that night, questions about my brother and Eve. I arrived early, around 6:30. His car wasn't in the lot, so I checked into Garden 3 and waited. By 7, I assumed he was checking into River 3, the way he always did, and that he would then double back to meet me. By 8 o'clock, I feared he wasn't coming. I'd sent him 3 messages on the Signal app. I went down to the parking lot to look for his car, and it still wasn't there. So I left.
That's it? That's your story?
That's the truth. Carrie looks at me with disapproval, the way she did in high school when I told her and Eve about Jeremy Ashbourne and whatever had happened or not happened between us that particular day. It made me feel the same way it makes me feel now. Ridiculous. She walks from the table to the small bar by the window. Then she picks up a bottle of wine. I have no idea why.
Did you and Peter ever try the California Pinot on the bar in your room? The one with the 4 points label?
No, everyone knows not to drink that overpriced garbage. I don't care what label they put on it. Why?
I believe someone killed Peter Walsh with the bottle left on the bar in River 3 that night. It was missing after his brief stay. I've sent one to the forensics lab to be matched against the wound on Peter's neck. The one that killed him.
Chapter 52. Eve. I managed to stay on the dock. I stood up and got myself together, my heart still racing from the close call. I took a hairbrush from my purse and ran it through the mess of curls. I wet a finger and slid it under my eyes where the mascara had smeared again from all the crying. I straightened my shirt. Still, I didn't feel ready. I took a long breath, closed my eyes, and remembered what Mrs. Rosario had told me that day in her kitchen. And that's when the voice echoed from farther down the dock. I was terrified, but also relieved. My heart was in my throat, choking me, when I heard him say, "There you are."
Chapter 53. Carrie. Brooke walks to where I stand, grabs my arms. I try to read her face, but it's the same one I saw in my car just 3 days ago on Leroy Street when she was telling me her story about David Paul. And I think the same thing I did the summer Eve died after I learned the truth about her plans to be with Jeremy, that I never knew Brooke Lowry at all. Maybe no one ever did. Not even Eve. Eve. Years of enduring this gut feeling that her death was not accidental. Being told I was just sad that she was gone, that I had to get over it. And, God, I think about Rob saying those exact words, threatening to leave our marriage, when he knew her that summer. Everyone I love has been making me feel like I'm the one who's crazy. But I'm not. I'm not. I pull away from Brooke and take a step back. My body is shaking. I've been holding myself together by sheer willpower, and it's just given way. I feel a flood of adrenaline.
Stop it! Stop lying, Brooke!
Carrie?
Tell me what happened to Eve that night.
What? Why are we talking about Eve?
Because Peter was looking into her death, and that's what got him killed.
Well, I don't know.
Oh, come on, Brooke. Tell me another story. You left Jeremy on the road, then you came back here. What happened next? Tell me, Brooke, or I swear to God I'll arrest you for both murders right now.
Brooke looks at Tyler, who's standing behind the desk. He's terrified, but of what? Peter Walsh must have thought he was involved in Eve's death, and Brooke must know. That has to be why she's been lying. Maybe why she killed Peter. Finally, she looks back at me. A new face this time. One I haven't seen before. And she says,
I swear I don't know what happened to Peter Walsh, but I will tell you what happened to Eve. Chapter 54. Brooke. Carrie finally broke. I knew she would. It would be easy to keep lying, or say nothing. What does she really have for proof? A dead man's Google searches? Maybe Peter killed Eve. It's possible, and now we'll never know. And my prints aren't on that wine bottle, wherever it is now. They aren't anywhere in the room called River 3. But Tyler, this has been slowly killing him all these years. The secret we swore we would keep together to protect our family. Maybe this is what he needs to finally break free of it. He was just a kid. He won't be prosecuted. And me? Well, I know how to tell a story, even to a jury if I have to. I look back to Carrie, and I tell her what she wants to know. I did leave Jeremy on that road. It was late, well past midnight, right? And I was destroyed after seeing him in the car with Eve. Did he tell you that part?
Yes.
I thought maybe that had been her plan, and his, that I would be waiting for him all night at his house, and he would be somewhere else with her.
Brooke, that's absurd. Eve would never have done that to you.
Don't you think I know that? I wasn't rational. It had been a year of wanting this man. You know what that was like for me, Carrie.
Just finish the story. What happened after you came back to the inn?
I take a second to sort things out in my head. Where to begin with this piece that's too horrible to tell? And then I hear Tyler from behind the desk. His voice is soft and shaking. Carrie and I both turn to watch him as he begins to tell it.
It's my fault. I'm the reason he chased after her, and I didn't stop him.
Tyler, no. It's not your fault.
What is he talking about? Tyler? Who ran after Eve?
It was...
Wait, okay? I'll tell you. Tyler, stay out of this, please. I don't let Tyler say another word. I skip to the part where Tyler sent Eve away from the steps outside the game room. How he then went to look for her and saw her with our father. In an embrace. How he yelled, screamed at them, making Eve run away. Tyler ran in the other direction, down the lawn to the steps of the game room where he sat, crying, holding his head in his hands. He sat there for a long time until I found him, I tell Carrie. That's where I came into this chapter. He told me what he saw. And part of me wasn't surprised. I'd hated what was between them. I'd hated her for it more than my father sometimes. I stormed up the lawn to the side stairs that led to the patio. I was about to turn toward the dock where Tyler thought Eve had gone and where he assumed our father had chased after her. He'd heard him call her name. But then I saw him sitting at a table in the dark. He was crying when I went to him, and I asked, like, what happened? Where's Eve? But he wouldn't answer. He just stared at me with frantic, desperate eyes. And I reached out to him. And that's when I realized that he was soaking wet.
Chapter 55. Carrie. Silence fills the room as I try to take this in, as Brooke and Tyler relive that night. I can't believe it. It doesn't seem possible. Mr. Lowry loved Eve, we all knew that, but I never believed it was that kind of love, the kind his wife accused him of, the kind that Eve never would have been a part of. Mr. Lowry was like a father to her. Maybe that's what tormented him. Maybe he couldn't live with himself one